get addicted to being in that flight and fight.
For sure. I think I've been there for sure, where I've been like addicted to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So to that point, you know, I think a wonderful example of this, and you've hit the nail on the head, Raquel, like we do get used to the feelings of stress and through the lens of chemistry, right? Cortisol and adrenaline. My nervous system loves predictability, even if that predictability is uncomfortable, right? I don't like being stressed, but I'm used to it. And you ask most people today, you know, sit down and meditate. And what do they tell you, right? I sit down and a minute later, it's like, my mind is racing. I should clean the house. I should call my son. You know, like that's the nervous system being like, hey, let's go back to what we are used to, which is go, 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 stress, stress, stress. And so we feel uncomfortable with this slowing down and entering that parasympathetic state. And then we feel like, I can't meditate. I got to go back to doing stuff, you know, and I go back into that sympathetic, back into that cortisol because it's just what I'm used to.
Welcome to Functional Moms Podcast, lifestyle medicine for women over 40. Let's age on our own terms. This episode is for you if you're curious how breathing can improve your mental and physical health. Breathing is something we take for granted, and it's not something we're taught to optimize.
We are excited to have Campbell Will on the show. Campbell is an integrative physiotherapist who focuses on how the breath influences human health and performance. His popular Instagram account, Breath Body Therapy, shares how breathing optimally can change your life. I would also like to add that Campbell is a married father of a two-year-old son.
Campbell's experience spans ICUs, neurosurgical wards, elite athletes, and private practice. Across this spread of clinical settings, he noticed a widely unaddressed commonality, breathing. When done correctly, it elevates and enhances health. When done poorly, it drives dysfunction.
Campbell trained in Poland with Wim Hof, the biggest name in the breathwork industry. Breathwork helped him improve focus, stress, and sleep. He now runs his own breath coaching practice and trains health professionals to master breathwork. Campbell has a special offer for our listeners today, so be sure to stay tuned.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Campbell. We're thrilled to have you. And we often hear about the benefits of breathwork, but most of us don't really understand what that means. And that includes Raquel and myself. We're really excited to learn more today. So can you share with us a little about what functional breathwork is?
Yes, I'd love to. Well, firstly, thank you for having me, Kristen, Raquel. I'm super excited to share this as well, and hopefully can kind of provide your audience with some insight. You know, I see when we talk about breathwork, most people are thinking of one end of the spectrum, right? This kind of peak experience, people lay down, they hyperventilate, and maybe there's some big emotional releases, but that's really kind of like just one end of the spectrum. If we go to the opposite end of the spectrum and we look at breathing as a function of health, right? It's something we do 20, 25,000 times every day, the moment we're born until the moment we die. And when it's not done well, it creates a lot of kind of disruption in the body. The tricky part for a lot of people is a lot of that disruption won't be in breathing. And no one really comes to me and say, I have a problem with my breathing. They come to me saying, I'm stressed, I'm anxious, I'm overwhelmed, I'm not sleeping, I have poor energy. And so my role is helping someone understand that perhaps some of those dysfunctions or imbalances are being driven by this function of the body that is being done incorrectly 20,000 times a day. You know, so there's this incredible cumulative load. You know, we as humans, I think, are incredibly resilient. You know, we can get by doing perhaps non-optimal things for a while. But if you just think of the sheer scale, like 20,000 reps a day, if I'm not doing that well, it is going to catch up to me. And so this idea of kind of functional breath retraining is like, let's restore breathing back to its optimal state. So it supports the body, the nervous system, physiology, rather than kind of pushes it further out of that state of balance.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So how would we know if we are out of balance? Like, what are some signs?
So we can kind of, you know, if we could break this down, we could look at physical signs, we could look at emotional signs, and we could also look at kind of like cognitive signs. Physical, it may stem from pain, it could be posture, right? When we look at the diaphragm, which is our breathing muscle, but also influences our posture, our blood flow, our digestion, like it's kind of the center point of the body and has all of these different attachments. And so, you know, most people unfortunately today sit for 6, 8, 10 hours a day. And that puts the diaphragm and the rib cage kind of in a particular position that makes them quite inefficient. And what we tend to see a lot is this kind of upper chest breathing. We can kind of like talk about the flow on effect of that, of what does that do to the nervous system? And then what does that do to our physiology? But in essence, it's kind of changing the relationship between, you know, my low back, my neck, my rib cage, my pelvis through this kind of lens of the physical picture. If we think emotional, right, when we talk about how breathing impacts, what I love to talk about is how it impacts the nervous system. You know, we've all heard of the fight or flight versus the rest and digest states of our nervous system. So the emotional side can be that kind of like high stress, high anxiety, overwhelmed, reactive. You know, I don't have a lot of capacity to deal with stressful things. The cognitive side of things, we're usually looking like lack of concentration, poor focus, brain fog. And again, we can kind of zoom in on each of these. What's the mechanism behind those disruptions? You know, so it's easy for someone to say, oh, well, poor breathing causes brain fog. But I really like to take people one step further and explain exactly how related to blood flow, it's related to energy production. And so this whole kind of physiology picture behind breathing is where I think we haven't spent enough time paying attention to. When most people think about breathing, they think of how they breathe, right? What part of my body is moving? But this whole picture of chemistry and physiology that relates to things like anxiety and energy production. And so that's where I get super fascinated, is that kind of like interplay between the physical, the mental and emotional, and then kind of the cognitive or intellectual even.
Wow, that's really interesting. I was looking at one of your posts and I think you were like talking about, I don't remember the other, but the principles versus, I don't like the methods. Yes. And that really, really spoke to me. So we saw on your page that there are four fundamental principles of breathing. And we were curious where these principles came from, like where did they derive from?
Yeah. So it really comes back, you know, if we zoom out from just talking about breathing, we just look at the human body, you know, these kind of principles that I like to teach in terms of breath work come back to how does the body function, you know? And if I even take those principles and zoom out a little bit further, what I've come to kind of learn and be confident in over the past 10 years is the three kind of building blocks of the body is movement, chemistry, and electricity, right? The movement being how I hold my body, how I move through space, the movement of my blood flow, et cetera. Chemistry being physiology, and then electricity being the nervous system. That is literally how the body rocks. And so when we kind of come back to looking at breathing, breathing kind of targets each of those systems. Movement being, well, how do I move the air in and out of my body? How does my posture relate to how I move? Diaphragm being a big part of my posture. Chemistry, well, physiology, right? This interaction of oxygen and carbon dioxide, a few other gases, and how that relates to things like neurotransmitters. And then electricity being the nervous system. You know, I think sometimes we fail to recognize the body is electric. You know, if anyone's been for an ECG to measure their heart, it's an electrocardiogram. Wow. Right? If they've gone for a brain scan, it's an EEG, an electroencephalogram. They're measuring electrical capacity and potential in the body. And so the nervous system is really this kind of like electrical system. And one of the biggest drivers of the nervous system is how we're breathing. That kind of fourth and final principle is there a lot of those things come together, and that's the kind of psycho-emotional state. You know, how does my mind relate to what's going on in my body? What emotional state am I in? And so that kind of fourth piece is a little bit less objective in my mind, because it's kind of like based on a relationship between those other three things. And if I could just kind of extend that a little bit further, you know, if we think of movement or the body, right? What does someone that's depressed or feeling flat do? You know, the shoulders are rounded, the head's down. We want to curl up. We want to lay in bed, you know? So that's relating to my emotional state. When we look at physiology, again, there's these really interesting kind of studies coming out based on how tolerant I am to carbon dioxide, which is a gas all of our cells are producing, how that relates to states of anxiety and also stress. And then the electricity side, the nervous system, you know, I would argue that one of the biggest problems we face today is this kind of chronic dysregulation of the nervous system. Our nervous system evolved in a wildly different environment to where we live today. You know, it evolved, we were walking through the jungle and across the plains, and there was these moments of stress, and then there was these moments of safety. But today it's wake up, iPhone, social media, email, my boss, my kids, get to work, process food, in proper lighting environment. Like, we're in this constant state of stimulus and stress, and that keeps us in that kind of sympathetic nervous system. And the sympathetic nervous system doesn't really care about longevity. It cares about survival. So it kind of shuts down a lot of these processes that keep us healthy and happy, and it focuses on, I need to get through this stressful period. But today, the stressful period doesn't end, because there's just this endless list of to-dos and hustle culture that we all live in. And like, so many of these factors that are causing a disruption of my nervous system, that again, we can kind of come back to, well, what emotional state does that put someone in, right? I'm always feeling under the pump. There's always things that I should be doing. I'm guilty. And it kind of that ongoing disruption, I think, is a big part of a lot of the diseases that we see today. You know, specific, they're much more general, right? The chronic disease epidemic that we're seeing, I think it comes back to a lot of like, what state is the body in for prolonged periods of time? Is it in a healing, regenerative, restorative state, or is it just trying to survive?
Right. And that state of mind of, is like, is it here or is it there? And I relate to everything that you just said so intensely. And I'm like, just thinking, like, just the other day, I felt myself. I think sometimes we get used to, or you can get addicted to being in that.
For sure.
I think
I've been there for sure, where I've been like addicted to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
To that point, you know, I think a wonderful example of this, and you've hit the nail on the head, Raquel. Like, we do get used to the feelings of stress. And through the lens of chemistry, right? Cortisol and adrenaline. Mm. My nervous system loves predictability, even if that predictability is uncomfortable. Right? Yeah. I don't like being stressed, but I'm used to it. And you ask most people today, you know, sit down and meditate. And what do they tell you, right? I sit down and a minute later, it's like, my mind is racing. I should clean the house. I should call my son. You know, like, that's the nervous system being like, hey, let's go back to what we are used to, which is go, 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 stress, stress, stress.
That's the
and
comfort zone.
And so we
feel
uncomfortable with this slowing down and entering that parasympathetic state. And then we feel like, I can't meditate. I got to go back to doing stuff, you know, and I go back into that sympathetic, back into that cortisol, because it's just what I'm used to.
Right. And we know, like, we feel the stress and we want to get away from that stress. But the second we go to do something that is helpful, it's like you're an addict. And you're also, it's like, how ironic is it that that stressed out state is your comfort zone? Isn't that funny? It's so funny. That whole deal. Wow. Very, very interesting.
Yeah. So we saw a post you had a couple weeks ago about how we use coffee and alcohol and weed and these things to kind of get to a different state. But then you pose the question, well, what if you use like the breath to get to a different state? And that really intrigued us. So we would like to hear more about
what does that look like?
We like that.
Let's kind of dive into this idea of state regulation or self-regulation. I'm of the opinion that everything we do is an attempt to shift how we feel. Mm-hmm. And we can look at that through the emotional lens, or we can look at it through more the underlying nervous system lens, right? When I want to call my mom, right? It's probably because I want to feel comfort. When I want to watch Netflix, when I want to drink a coffee, when I want to drink a glass of wine, all of these things, exercise, social media, I feel are this kind of attempt of my nervous system to shift its state. And we can get reliant on, you know, substances or compounds or behaviors that give me a reliable shift in my energy. You know, coffee, you know, I think I was trying to read the stats. I think we consume something like 2 billion cups of coffee a day across the world.
Wow.
Right. And so what does coffee do? It's a reliable state shifter. I feel tired and I want to feel alert. I'm going to drink a cup of coffee. Right. So the shift that I'm looking for is from tired to alert. I feel stressed at the end of the day. It was overwhelming. The traffic was bad. I got home. The house is a mess. I need to have a glass of wine. Right. Mm. What is that doing if not winding me down a little, right? Like, people call it a wind down, you know? And so again, I'm simply looking for a shift in my state. The problem, you know, with some of these compounds and some of these behaviors is maybe they're not that good for us, you know, especially in excess, but perhaps also just like the consistency of that. And so what if I had a little bit more self-awareness of, oh, I'm looking for a shift, right? When I'm like, I need a cup of coffee, maybe that's just my nervous system being like, we want to pick it up a gear. What's another way I can get there? Well, if we look at something like breathing and the way that it impacts the nervous system, I can take myself from a parasympathetic state, calm and relaxed, to a more sympathetic state, focused and alert. And I could do that reliably. Namely, I focus more on the inhale rather than the exhale. I breathe a little bit faster than I usually would. And that is going to pick up my heart rate. It's going to make me more alert. We see arousal levels in the brain go up. That's kind of what coffee does, right? Mm-hmm. It's a stimulant.
Sure. Yeah.
And vice versa. I get home at the end of the day and go, God, I need a glass of wine. Well, if I can take that moment and be like, what is the wine doing? What am I wanting here? I'm wanting to shift down a little bit. I'm feeling ramped up and hyped up, and today was tough. Can I take a couple of minutes to see if I can get myself there through this internal mechanism, right? Maybe I start to breathe a little bit slower. I extend my exhale. I might do some humming. I relax my body. Lo and behold, a couple of minutes later, I'd be like, actually, I don't need the wine. I feel fine now. You know, we've become so used to coffee lifts me up, wine brings me down, as the simple examples there, that I think it steered people away from like, well, what else could get you there? And a really reliable, safe, effective, healthy way to do that is by manipulating or modulating the way that you breathe. And so I like to kind of position that for people. And it's not to say, don't drink. I love coffee and I drink wine when I choose to drink wine, you know, but it's more am I relying on those things. Right, sure. And I had this really like perfect example of this not so long ago, where I ran out of coffee, right? And my immediate was like, what am I going to do? I'm like, oh, you know, but I know so many people that if they don't have their morning cup, you know, it's like, step back, right? And that reliance is like, oh, maybe I need to check that relationship. Maybe I need to use coffee a little bit more intentionally. I make coffee a bit of a ritual rather than it's like a routine. I just get up and I drink my coffee. It's like I grind my beans and I prepare and it's a bit of a reward and I use it intentionally. But if I don't have access to coffee, or maybe I'm out and I don't want to get, you know, crappy coffee, I'm like, I still need that shift. I'm looking for a coffee for a reason. My nervous system wants to change gears. So how can I support it in doing that?
Wow, I can't believe it, Campbell. I used your breathwork method without even knowing it. When I quit smoking, I smoked for so many years. And it wasn't until my daughter, who was 7 years old, came running from a bus and like, Mom, and I thought something happened. And she's like, she was learned in school about smoking. And she's like, you gotta stop smoking. It causes cancer. You know, she's freaking out. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this girl's gonna think that her mom is the biggest dumbass if I don't figure out how to quit smoking. And I said, okay, Taya, you know, I'm gonna figure it out. So I end up quitting smoking. And one of the things was I replaced a bad habit with a good habit, like started going to the gym and started being more physical, like every time I felt. But one of the things that happened, I didn't smoke inside my house, but the minute that I walked out the door, it was like all these demons that would attack me because I had all these associations. And I was like, oh my gosh. And so I don't even know how I thought of this, but I just, because we had a little spot where we used to smoke and that was like my little spot. I went to that little spot and I went...
Just some breathing.
I'm so excited by this. I want to pull on this thread, Raquel, because it's so fascinating. And you found that intuitively. But that is a replacement for a lot of people that are trying to quit smoking. Like, let's break down what you just did, right? Mm. When we look at, you know, I smoke a cigarette. Yes, there's nicotine, there's chemical. But if you actually look at how long does it take between drawing on a cigarette before the nicotine hits your brain and gives you dopamine, there's a delay there. But if you talk to any smoker, the moment the cigarette touches their lips, they're like, oh, you know, what are you doing if we remove the cigarette, right?
You were just looking.
You changed your environment. So you went from inside to outside. You went from your work there, take a smoke break. So you're outside, new environment. Mm. You take a low, resisted inhale.
You hold it.
You pause at the top, and then you take an extended exhale.
Yeah.
You've just manipulated your breathing.
Yeah.
How much of the shift that I get from that cigarette is actually just a change in my breathing? Yes, then the dopamine from the nicotine, et cetera, right? There's an addictive capacity to that. But I think it's really fascinating because I've heard multiple people say when I tried to quit smoking, you know, I went out and I smoked, right?
Right.
You should change your environment, change your breathing. And you might get that same shift that you're looking for that the cigarette has provided without the cigarette. But I think it's amazing you kind of found that intuitively.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, that was a real hack. And I realized also that I was like, wow, all these years I didn't need the cigarette. I just needed to go outside and I just needed to breathe and connect with myself and take, I'm just one of those people. Like I need, you know, I'm sure I'm not just one of those people. I'm sure every person on this planet just needs to take a break and breathe and exhale. Intentionally.
Yeah. And that's, you know, part of the message that I really get out to people is, you know, there's this preconceived idea that breathwork means they're going to lay down on the yoga mat and breathe for 20 minutes. No, but what you just described, like that's breathwork to me, you know, that stepping away from my desk and like I just did breathwork, you know, so it doesn't need to be this isolated practice. It's kind of a lifestyle habit where you're just more aware of these changes that you can make when you need to make them.
Yes, I love what you just said. That I just want to highlight that because that's the biggest thing. I think when we think, like you just said, isolate ourselves to go on a mat. Okay, now I got to do this breathwork and I got to do it at this time and I got to go on the mat. It's like another thing. It's like, oh my gosh, another thing that I have to do now, right? With all the other million things, I have to drink water, I have to do this, I have to do that. And I just love how you just like it's simplified that to like the bare bones, like you're breathing, you're being intentional.
The other thing to add to that, you know, so it's another thing that you have to do, but I also think it creates a separation, which now people go, I've done my breath work, now I don't need to pay attention to my breathing for the other 99% of the day.
Right.
You know, like that just doesn't work. And it's like, you know, if you, let's say I sit down and do 30 minutes of breath work a day, which is a long time for a lot of people, that's like 0.5% of my day.
Mm.
And so this idea that it's an isolated practice allows me to take my attention away from my breathing for the other 19,000 breaths that I'm going to take in a day. And if we just think of that, you know, like which of those is going to move the needle more? Me sitting down and doing 20 to 30 minutes of breathing or me being better at breathing for 23 hours and 30 minutes? Like, of course, that's going to be more impactful. And so this idea of not creating breathwork as an isolated, separate practice and actually learning, oh, wait, I can just develop a little bit more awareness and a bit more control of my breathing all day. And then I don't need to do breathwork. I'm always doing breathwork.
That is really...
I mean, I love that. That simplifies it. And I also love how you're talking about checking in with yourself about what state you're trying to shift to. And, you know, so much we just grab the coffee because we're tired. We don't even think. So like to actually give yourself a second, think about it. and think about maybe how you could use your breath to change your state is phenomenal. That is a huge tip, I think, for people. I mean, like you said, sometimes you don't have coffee or a glass of wine and you need something to help you regulate your nervous system. That's great.
Yeah. And often it is that subtle little check-in that it does most of the work. You know, I talk about this kind of, you know, model of first awareness, and then you get to choose what you need to do. And a lot of the clients that I work with, they do the awareness piece and they're like, oh, I don't need to do anything else. All I needed was to stop and notice. I'm feeling a bit stressed because I got that extra project at work. The kids messed up the house. Like, and it's okay for me to feel a bit stressed. But we fail to acknowledge the fact that I'm feeling stressed, and then we carry on and it's all busy and now I'm snapping at my partner. It's like all of that may have been avoided by pausing and checking and being like, oh, I'm kind of worked up because X, Y, and Z happened today. That's okay. You know, is there something I need to do? Yeah. And sometimes the answer might be like, yeah, I need a glass of wine, but that's done intentionally, right? And other times it might be like, I don't need the wine tonight. I'm going to take 5 minutes and just breathe slowly, or I'm going to take a walk, or I'm going to do whatever. But it's rather than this kind of reactive autopilot that I think so many of us live in almost all the time. It's like, pause, take stock. Why am I feeling stressed? Okay. Is that valid? Yeah, of course it's valid. You know, what strategies could I use to maybe feel a bit less stressed? Okay. Here are my options. I'm going to choose this one today. Wonderful. You're the kind of driver of that experience rather than it just being like bang, 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 autopilot.
Right. I think there's also a lot of value in being okay. Like, I feel stressed, I'm annoyed, or I feel hurt because this happened. I am not going to go and have a glass of wine or smoke weed or whatever to like mask that pain. It's there. Like, just have the balls to go through it type of thing. Maybe breathe through it. Like, you know, it's just part of the process, part of the human experience.
I think that's such a powerful point. You know, I think we're at a point today, you know, almost culturally that emotions are bad.
Hey,
I shouldn't
you wanna
feel
run
stressed.
Away.
I shouldn't be overwhelmed. I should be grateful. You know, it's like, but how strange is that? You know, like we have the ability to feel these so-called negative emotions for a reason. You know, like, I don't think nature gets it wrong. I just don't. And so the fact that we have the capacity to feel stressed and anxious and upset and overwhelmed and pissed off, right? Well, I should validate that. And I should be like, yeah, I am pissed off because this happened. Right. The difference, you know, I love to help people shift away from like good emotions and bad emotions to kind of renewing emotions and depleting emotions. You know, if you're pissed off all day, tell me how you feel at the end of the day. You feel depleted, right? It's an energy drain, rather than if you feel excited all day or grateful or joyous, you know? So when I am pissed off, it's like, yeah, I'm allowed to be pissed off and I can sit with that and I can work my way through it. But if I want that to stop depleting me, right? I don't want to be pissed off all day. What can I do about it?
Yeah.
You know, I can shift from that depleting emotional state into one that's a little bit more renewing or supporting.
Yeah. Like for me, yeah, like it could also be like physical things like going for a run, get a workout in, read some scriptures. You know, there's so many things that you can take to create a new narrative in your mind on how, you know, are processing your situation.
Can we pull on that thread a little bit? Because it's such
absolutely.
And it's not my framework. I think it's originally, I can't remember where I read it, but I just gravitated towards it. It may well be Tony Robbins that first kind of like had this kind of narrative, right? Which is state, story, strategy.
Yes.
What you just described, Raquel, is like you changed your state. So I might be frustrated, or I might feel low, or I'm feeling, you know, a bit self-deprecating, whatever. I go for a run and I've changed my state. That allows me to way more effectively change my story and perhaps come up with a strategy, right? If I just sat, you know, I'm feeling frustrated and I'm just going to sit on the couch and I don't change my state, it's very hard to change my story because my story is a reflection of my state, right? When you're feeling excited, you know, you don't tend to have negative thoughts. You have excited thoughts and positive thoughts, right? Vice versa, you're feeling really depressed. It's pretty hard to think your way out of that. You know, like, well, I should be grateful for this. Unless I change my state, very difficult to change a story because they're kind of attached. So this is why, again, something like breath work or exercise or movement or changing your environment, it changes your state.
Right.
And then you can kind of start to look at the story that you're telling, right? And then perhaps you can come up with a strategy. But without that state change, you kind of get stuck in that loop where you're trying to battle your own mind, your own emotional state, and it's not going to shift because it's a reflection of your nervous system.
Right. And you're in a cycle. You're like, you're in the washing machine just going.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Like, just even going for a walk for myself, I'll find myself come up with more creative ideas. Like if I'm stuck or something, it'll like help me solve problems. It's just by going for a walk.
And it's such a simple thing, you know, and I think we discount it. Good could have walked through. That's like the world of good.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. Well, we also wanted to ask you, so we see you work with a lot of practitioners teaching them breath work. And we were wondering, you know, we obviously are big advocates for functional medicine and we hope that it integrates one day with conventional, but we're curious, are you seeing some conventional like practitioners getting interested in this area as well?
Yeah. And it's honestly my favorite practitioner because we can work to change their mind a little bit. You know, so much of what I teach in the practitioner program is really unlearning. You know, my background's a physical therapist. I've been a physical therapist for 10 years. And for the first probably 5 years, I learned the kind of dominant model that we see in Western health, which is symptom management. You have a list of symptoms, which means you have this diagnosis and I'm going to treat you based on that diagnosis and these symptoms.
Right.
And I think that's just an incredibly flawed model, which is why functional medicine hopefully is, you know, the new way forward. It's like root cause. And so a lot of when people come, and I had quite a few doctors in the last kind of 2-3 cohorts, that starting to shift that idea away from how can I use breath work to manage the symptoms that my patient has? I'm like, that's the wrong way to look at it. That's the old model, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The new model is how can I use breath work to support and create health in the body? Forget the symptoms, right? The symptoms can vary based on each individual. And so if we're forever trying to manage the symptoms, I think we've just got a new version of the old model, right? Like I'm replacing perhaps pharmaceuticals with breathing, but it's still trying to use the symptom as like, I'm going to address that. Instead, what if we just like, what does the body need? You know, what are these foundations of health? What are the prerequisites the body needs? You know, and breathing is one of those determining factors. And so if I stop looking at how do I manage this condition or this disorder or this dysfunction and be like, how do I support the nervous system? How do I support someone's physiology? How do I support their movement, their posture? I find with my clients and a lot of my students' feedback is like, oh, the symptoms happen to go away when I stop trying to manage them, right? Mm-hmm. And I changed my course of attack and started to be like, how do we support the body? How do we create health instead of how do we manage symptoms or disease? And so I get super excited when I have, you know, traditional medical practitioners that we can help like, hey, let's shift the perspective a bit, you know, away from using breathwork to manage certain symptoms. Like, let's see if we can just start to look at how do we support the nervous system? How do we support the body? And usually the symptoms will start to alleviate themselves.
Yeah, I love that idea. So creating health versus just looking at the symptoms all the time.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool. I identify, like, I'm a fitness professional also. And so I work with clients and we're doing a set and this, you know, for example, a woman, she's starting to feel it and I could just see her face and she starts breathing. So she's like, you know, and I'm like, stop. I'm like, breathe in, blow it out. She's getting all in her head that she's not going to make it. And just by her taking that pause and using her breath, it's amazing to watch. It's like she's re-empowered herself.
I love that term. Mm-hmm. You know, of all the ways that people ask me, what does breath do? Like in its simplest distillation, I think it's a tool of empowerment, right? Like it empowers you to regulate your emotions. It empowers you to change your fitness, change your state, change your, you know, like it is really a tool of self-empowerment. And coming back to this kind of conversation around creating health rather than kind of managing and fighting disease, you know, a lot of the practitioners that come into our program seem to come with the same two pieces of information. I feel there's a missing link. It's something I hear all of the time. My patients with stress, anxiety, you know, I don't feel equipped with the tools that I have to address anxiety or stress, right? So they, I feel there's a missing link. But the second one that I think is super fascinating is I don't want my patients or my clients to be reliant on me. And I think that's a beautiful thing to think about. You know, we get taught through physiotherapy, right? Like we don't want treatment reliance. You know, you don't want your patient to have to rely on you to make them better because it sets up a very interesting dynamic. And so breath becomes this tool of self-empowerment. Let me give you the education. Let me give you the practical use of your own breath so that you don't need me anymore. You know, and I think that's a really wonderful way to kind of approach something like this. It's like, I don't want to be the one that has to do the breath work for you or with you. I want you to understand how it works so that you can use it all day, every day, and you're the one that's in the driver's seat.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So being mindful of our time today, we wanted to ask you if there's two simple steps we could take today to optimize our breathing. Like what's something easy we could start with?
The first, and it's easy and hard at the same time, but it is arguably the most important step and it is the foundation. And I think it is missed so often when people are like, oh, I'm going to like lean into this breathwork thing. And what I'm talking about is awareness. There's no point jumping to what tool should I use to reduce my anxiety if I'm not aware of what makes me anxious, right? So this self-awareness or breath awareness, there's this really interesting relationship between like breathing patterns and my emotional state. We all know this intuitively. What do you do when you're frustrated? You didn't choose to do that. That was a reflection of your state. And so if I kind of bring this greater awareness to when I am feeling stressed, how am I breathing? When I'm feeling relaxed, how am I breathing? When I'm feeling tired, how am I breathing? Right? No right, wrong, no good, bad, no judging, no trying to improve it. Firstly, like just build the awareness of like, I now notice that my breathing feels different when I relax versus when I'm really stressed. What that's kind of doing is opening up this idea of like, okay, so next time I feel stressed and I want to feel relaxed, I know what my relaxed breathing looks like and feels like because I've noticed it a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. So arguably the most important step is developing a little bit of awareness. And that's a kind of loaded piece of advice because people are like, well, how do I do that? You know, we breathe 20,000 times a day. You can't be aware of all the breath, right? No. So it's not this like, don't become hyper aware. The tool that I use is Raquel, you mentioned this earlier, changing a bad habit with a good one. Mm-hmm. This thing that we all have, right? Mm-hmm. Current stats, it's different depending on where you are, but we check it somewhere between 80 and 100 times a day for most people. What if every time you checked your phone, you also checked your breathing, mm-hmm. right? So I pick up my phone and then I'm like, am I breathing through my nose or my mouth? Okay. Mm-hmm. Am I breathing up into my chest or down into my ribcage? Am I breathing fast or am I breathing slow? So those kind of three reference points is all you need to do. It's like nose or mouth. Okay. If your mouth is open, close it. Nasal breathing is much better for your nervous system. Mm-hmm. Chest or belly? Oh yeah, my shoulders are rising. How can I take that kind of quote unquote belly breath? And then fast or slow? And it really doesn't matter what you're doing. You could always slow down for one or two breaths. Yeah. And then you let it go, right? You let go of that focus. And then the next time you pick up your phone, you're like, oh, how am I breathing? Mm-hmm. And so therein we have this opportunity 50 to 100 times a day to check in on my breathing. And I'm going to become more aware of these subtle shifts that are occurring all the time because I'm starting to pay attention to
it. Yeah, well, I have a confession to make. While we've been with you, I've just been very mindful on how I'm breathing. And I've caught myself being a shallow breather, like just breathing, like just getting enough breath so that I don't die.
Oh yeah, I can relate to that as well. Yeah, I think I'm much often up in the chest versus low.
And so many people are, you know, there's kind of like the current estimates, and I'll tell you why I have a bit of a problem with this, you know, that like 30 to 60% of the population have dysfunctional breathing. My issue with that is like, we don't have clear criteria. What does that even mean? Is dysfunctional breathing when I breathe through my mouth 100% of the time, 50% of the time, up into my chest, up, you know, like there's so much vagueness there.
Right.
But a lot of people do have this more kind of vertical pattern. And that can be from posture, right? Mm-hmm. If you sit, mm-hmm. your rib cage and your diaphragm get a little bit kind of cramped, mm-hmm. and you will choose to breathe up here because it's easier. Mm-hmm. And something that I think is incredibly important for people to understand is that the body's not self-optimizing. It doesn't choose the best option. It chooses the easiest option. Always. Mm-hmm. 10 times out of 10, it will choose the easy option. So if your diaphragm's all tight, your rib cage is all stiff, you will just pick your rib cage up because it's easier. It's more energy efficient, mm-hmm. right? It has a lot of repercussions, but it's choosing that because it's an easier option based on your posture. It might also be from pain. You know, someone that's had a low back injury, right? How does it feel to take a deep breath when you have a sore back? It hurts. Mm-hmm. So what do? Is you learn to take a shallow breath, right?
Sure.
Often the back maybe improves, but the breathing pattern is set. I think a really interesting one is pregnancy and birth. Mm-hmm. You know, you're both mothers, I believe, mm-hmm. right? Like,
yes.
Think of late in the trimester. How easy is it to take a big diaphragmatic breath, right? There is no room down there.
No.
You'd have to breathe up into your chest. Mm-hmm. There's also a fascinating correlation between certain hormones in the body, particularly estrogen, and that changing our tolerance to carbon dioxide. You have to start breathing a little bit shallower and faster, and estrogen levels go up something like 10x from start to end of pregnancy. Baby's born, and then we expect the body just to like bounce back to wonderful optimal breathing. It doesn't often happen, you know?
Yeah.
So often I work with moms, you know, that have a 2 or 3 or a 5 year old, and the anxiety kind of started, and they think it's this extended, perhaps postpartum. And a lot of the time it's like, wait, you're breathing like you're stressed and anxious 20,000 times a day. There's nothing wrong.
Wow.
Right? Your diaphragm's not moving. You're breathing up into your chest. You're breathing rapidly, and you've been doing that 20,000 times a day for the past 3 years. Of course you feel anxious.
Right. Yeah. And when you think about, Kristen, just think about how we were supposed to breathe when we were giving birth. You'd go... I remember the Kegel. What was it called?
The Lamaze.
Yeah, I remember that. You had to use that breath, and I'm like, wow, yes. So
yeah, and throw on top of that even C-section, right? Like the scar tissue, the abdomen, like it impacts the way you breathe.
Yes, you're right.
And I was fascinated by this watching my wife go through pregnancy and birth, and I speak to a lot of her friends our age that have young children. I'm like, no, who spoke to you about breathing? Zero, never, not
Nobody.
Once. Not, yeah. Except for labor, mm-hmm. where it's like, here's some breathing practices to get you through labor. Mm-hmm. It was not once mentioned. And I think that's a huge huge missed opportunity to support mothers, right? Of like this incredibly challenging transition where it's like, hey, some of your stress, some of your anxiety, some of your chronic state of nervous system state, you know, is due to the way that you're breathing. Mm-hmm. And we can correct that. You know, we can correct that quite quickly by giving you tools of diaphragm stretch or massage, rib cage mobility, breathing patterns that start to increase tolerance of carbon dioxide. You're understanding exercise in terms of like, I'm going out doing hard, heavy exercise. I'm breathing out all that CO2. I'm keeping myself in that kind of sensitized state. So there's subtle, quite simple tweaks that can really support, you know, new moms particularly in kind of getting breathing back to a state that's supporting them rather than continuing to push that kind of dysregulation.
Yeah, such a good point. And something not brought up at all. Never really heard anyone talk about that.
Yeah, we really covered a lot of ground here.
We did. And so I just want to reiterate for people. So one of your tips is then when you pick up our phone, we're going to think about our breathing. We're not going to judge it. We're not going to like label it, but we're going to just notice like, where is it? How are we feeling? What else am I missing here?
That's pretty much it, right? Yeah. Just build this muscle of awareness, you know, and let's give you a kind of part two of that is if we start. So number one, awareness, and number two, you can start to be control, you know, and the simplest practice to anyone and everyone that doesn't require a lot of know-how, you know, is breathe a bit slower. And it is that simple. You know, there's a lot, probably the most research is done on a pattern of breathing called resonant frequency. For the vast majority of people, not everyone, the vast majority, about 6 breaths a minute seems to be this kind of magic number. You know, you might be thinking, well, I breathe 15 times a minute. You're not breathing like that all day.
I have no idea how many times I breathe.
But slowing down and thinking of breathing in for 4 to 5 seconds and breathing out for 5 to 6 seconds. So slightly longer on the exhale is going to help support parasympathetic part of the nervous system. But slowing down and doing that for, you know, 5 minutes is kind of the minimum effective dose, right? Mm-hmm. Not to say that 1 minute isn't going to help, but we start to see 5 minutes and beyond, we get this kind of latent effect. Where it's like, I finished the practice, but I'm still in that kind of altered state, right? My nervous system is still supported. Below 5 minutes, you know, it works while I'm doing it, but I stop and then kind of the results are done there. So if you can set aside 5 minutes once or maybe twice a day to breathe roughly at 6 breaths a minute, you know, if it feels super uncomfortable, go a little bit faster. That is going to support the nervous system and that's going to support your physiology and it's going to encourage diaphragmatic breathing because you need more air to take a slower breath.
To me, 6 breaths per minute sounds like so little. I feel like I must be breathing double that. Like,
and most people are, you know, I know we're kind of coming towards the end, but if I could add one more thing, because I think both of you will be very interested in it. If we go back, you know, to, let's go all the way back to kind of early yogic texts, traditional Chinese medicine, they all talk about 6 to 8 breaths a minute as how we should be breathing. If we then get a little bit more recent, right? If you look at old medical texts, it was 8 to 12 breaths a minute. When I went through physiotherapy school and we did respiratory physiotherapy, it was 12 to 16 breaths a minute. If you now look at medical literature, normal breathing is 14 to 20 breaths a minute.
Wow.
You cannot tell me that our respiratory rate has naturally doubled in the space of a few hundred years. It's wild. We're just pushing the goalpost back and back and back.
Yeah.
And so we're failing to recognize dysfunction and disorder. When someone's breathing 18 times a minute, like it's normal, it's not normal, right? Mm-hmm. But if we call that normal because lots of people do it, we miss the opportunity to help someone, hey, your breathing is a problem, right? It is contributing to all of these issues that you have. It's not normal, right? How do we teach someone to slow down their breathing? And that's another conversation, but there's really reliable ways to do that. And I think we're missing a big opportunity because we just keep moving the goalposts.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I had no idea. So now I'm going to really think about that. 6 breaths per minute. Campbell has generously offered us a 20% discount code for his 5-week fundamentals of breath course.
Wow.
And it's a great starting point for anyone interested in optimizing their breathing. And Campbell, how would we get that code for that?
I'll share with you guys the code, or I can just tell you now, it's breathe20.
Yes.
So all capitals, breathe, and then the number 20.
Perfect.
I'll send you obviously the link, the landing page where you can purchase that course. It's a great starting point, right? Where it talks about a lot of the things we've covered today. How do I improve my mechanics of breathing? How do I improve my physiology? How do I support my nervous system? It's a self-paced course over about 5 weeks. You can get through it a little bit faster, but that way there's kind of time for the implementation. Yeah, and I get lots of really good feedback from people that it's like, oh, I just didn't know this kind of stuff existed and that I could actually be in charge of how I feel. So it's a wonderful stepping stone for people to kind of learn a little bit more about how their breath actually impacts how they feel.
That's very exciting. And we'll be sure to link that in our show notes too for people.
Yes, you can connect with Campbell on Instagram at Breath Body Therapy or his website, www.breathbodytherapy.com. www.thehydrogenhealth.com.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Kristen. Thank you, Raquel. It was a wonderful conversation.
Thank you.
The information provided in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purpose of diagnosing, curing, treating, or preventing any disease. We are functional medicine certified health coaches and not licensed medical professionals. The opinions and advice of guests are their own and also not considered to be medical advice. Always consult with a healthcare professional when making any healthy lifestyle changes. We would love to hear from you. Please leave a comment or review. Email us at info@functionalmoms.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit the subscribe button.